Just to make the segue for today, the point of six was that water is a very good solvent. It dissolves a great variety of things, including salts in general. And that should make sense because salts are made up of ions, right? They're ionic compounds. That's what a salt is. And ions have charge. Charged things dissolve well in water because water is polar. Water has partial charges. Ions have full charges. So that was the reason. But in 7, we see that it doesn't have to be salts. There's other things that dissolve in water as well, including proteins. Proteins are macromolecules that we've talked about the four categories before. We listed them before. We'll talk about them in detail after this upcoming test. But a protein, as you can see, is much bigger than a typical small molecule like a water molecule. But proteins are made up of amino acids, a bunch of them that get hooked together. And so the surface of a protein is full of partial negatives and partial positives. Where they are depends on what protein it is, but you can see that right here. Of course, it doesn't matter whether a surface is partially positive or partially negative because water can swivel in the appropriate direction so that the opposite polar charge of the water molecule is attracted to that partial charge of the solute, in this case a protein. So a big group of water molecules shroud or form a covering over the proteins, keeping them away from other proteins and other solutes in the solution. And the overall importance of this fact that water makes for a good solvent is that life, which, recall, is simply the chemical reactions that occur in cells. In other words, life is metabolism. More specifically than just saying life is chemistry, life is aqueous solution chemistry, meaning the chemical reactions that make up metabolism, that are life, take place in aqueous solution, meaning a solution in which the solvent specifically is water. That's what the aqueous word means. Okay, so that's why when we look for life, we look for water outside of Earth to see whether it's even possible. Well, next is 8. And here we have a reversible chemical reaction, which is why the arrows go both directions, so it can go from right to left or left to right. But this is the autoionization of water. Now, what does that auto prefix mean? It's in a lot of words, but what does auto mean? It means self. And so autoionization of water refers to the fact that if you have a sample of pure water, so nothing but water molecules, trillions and trillions of them, a certain small fraction of that population at any given moment will be undergoing this autoionization reaction in which water molecules, which of course are not ions, they are neutral overall. They're polar. Don't confuse that. They have partial charges. But they overall, the molecule is neutral because it doesn't have a difference between the total number of protons and the total number of electrons. All right? Like an ion does. But a water molecule can turn into an ion. And if you have this sample of pure water, the vast majority of the water molecules at any given moment will just be ordinary water molecules. They will not ionize, but a certain measurable small fraction, and it's a different, which ones are doing this, it changes moment to moment, but a certain small fraction will undergo autoionization, which is what this reaction is showing happening. So on the left, as reactants, you have two ordinary water molecules. We've already talked about those. Those are molecules because they're covalent compounds, right? Each one, as we've already discussed, is an oxygen bonded singly to two separate hydrogen atoms. if auto-ionization occurs, what happens is that one of those two ordinary water molecules will lose part of the hydrogen atom. Now, what is an entire hydrogen atom? If you just think of a hydrogen atom by itself, what is it made up of? So you're not ready for the test on Monday yet?
Proton, neutron, and an electron?
Right. What makes it hydrogen is that it has exactly one proton, but not a neutron. It is possible for a neutron to be there, but that's not ordinary hydrogen. An ordinary hydrogen atom is simply a proton and an electron. And there's two of those in a water molecule. But what's happening here is that the water molecule is losing not the entire hydrogen atom, but just the proton. The electron that used to be the property of that hydrogen and was being shared in the bond is being left behind with the water, which shouldn't surprise you because oxygen is greedy, right? It has a high electronegativity, so it will gladly keep that electron. Only the proton leaves the water molecule. And it goes to another water molecule. So this is a way of forming two ions simultaneously, right? Because both of these water molecules are ions, since neither of them any longer has the same number of protons and electrons overall. It's a transfer of a proton from one to another. All right? That's going to give you what you see on the right, a hydronium ion is the one that received that extra proton. And by the way, a proton can be symbolized as H+. There's three things that you need to equate in your mind. This symbol, H+, which you can read as H+, or you can read as hydrogen ion, same thing, or proton. A hydrogen ion is simply a proton. Right? It's a hydrogen atom that has lost its electron, so all that's left in the case of hydrogen is a proton when it lost the only electron that it has. Okay, so equate those three in your mind. They mean exactly the same thing. Proton, hydrogen ion, and H+ as the symbol. And that's what's being transferred from one molecule to the other. The one that receives that extra proton is now an ion because it has an extra positive compared to the number of electrons. That's a hydronium ion, H3+, the plus indicating it's an ion. The one that lost it and no longer has that hydrogen ion is a hydroxide ion, OH-. So you simultaneously form two ions. And almost all of the water molecules at any given moment are not doing this, but a tiny fraction are. Okay? Notice, though, importantly, that in order for this to happen, if all you have is pure water to start with, you can't make a hydronium ion without also making a hydroxide ion. So however many there are of one ion, there's the same number of the other ion in a pure water solution. Usually, though, this is correct that hydronium ions are formed, but often hydronium ions don't last as hydronium ions very long. They lose that protein just into solution as a proton by itself or a hydrogen ion by itself. So you can think of them as hydronium ions or as hydrogen ions. Really, you can think of it the same way. You can also think of this as just happening to one molecule. One water molecule can simply lose its proton to solution. And that simultaneously makes a hydroxide, what's left over after it loses the proton, and a hydrogen ion, H+. But once again, you can't make a hydrogen ion without also making a hydroxide ion. Is that all clear? Yeah.
So is pure water a solution then?
Well, It technically is, because in a pure water sample, you never have 100% of those particles being molecular water. There is always a certain amount of autoionization. So yes, technically it is a solution because you have the vast majority of them in molecular form, that's the solvent, and then you have these ions in solution, even though it's pure water. I like that question, by the way, because it relates to something we'll talk about next week. Well, this brings us to the pH scale. And I'm sure many of you have already learned probably three things about the pH scale. One is that it's a scale that measures how acidic a solution is, the degree of acidity. You probably also have learned that it's a scale that is centered on the value 7. 7 is neutral. And you probably also learned that if you have a pH value numerically below 7, 6 for instance, or anything lower than 7 numerically, then that is an acidic solution. And the lower the value of pH, the stronger the acid, the stronger the acidity of the solution. Have you learned these things? Well, you might have wondered, maybe not, but you might have wondered, why in the hell is it centered on 7? Why didn't they make it easy and just make it a 0 to 10 scale, centered on 5, for instance, which seems to make more sense for humans since we have 10 digits. Well, it's not that we arbitrarily chose 7. 7 is actually a measurement. Now, the pH scale is just one of many examples of what are called P scales. They all have that lowercase p starting with them. We use P scales basically as shorthand because it's a pain in the ass to deal with very small numbers when you write them out. Either in standard notation, 0.000, that's a pain in the ass. And it also, if you're doing it a lot, it becomes a pain in the ass even to do it in scientific notation. Something times 10 to the negative whatever is a pain. So since you know you're going to be dealing with these tiny numbers and it's always going to have negative exponents, they invented P scales just to make it easier to write the numbers. All right? This is just one example of a P scale. But it's pH, and the H stands for the hydrogen that's involved. Let me give you the mathematical definition of pH. It is the negative base 10 logarithm of the hydrogen ion concentration of a solution. Now, hydrogen ion is H plus, as we said. When you have that in square brackets in chemistry, that means the concentration of that stuff in the brackets. So this part alone means hydrogen ion concentration. And it's the negative base 10 log of that concentration. Now, concentration, as we'll talk more about in lab, can be calculated various ways. There's not just one unit that you can use for concentration. But the one that's used here is molar. Molar is a unit meaning moles of solute per liter of solution. All right? It's one way of expressing how much solute is there in your solution. The solution is the entire mixture, the solvent is the thing doing the dissolving, and the solute is the thing being dissolved by the solute. So in the case of pure water, water molecules make up the solvent. The water ions, the hydroxide and the hydrogen ions, are the solutes, and the overall mixture is the solution, which we just call water in that case. But back to this centering it on 7, if you actually carefully measure under standard conditions of temperature and pressure, that is, the concentration of ions in pure water due to the autoionization, remember I said it's a small fraction of water molecules at any given moment doing this, but if you actually measure it, you see that the concentration of the ions, in other words, square bracket H plus, equals 1 times 10 to the negative 7th moles per liter, or molar with a capital M. That's a measurement. That's just the concentration itself. And that's what we try to, that's what I'm saying becomes a pain in the ass to write, that we're, numbers like that over and over, and that's why P scales were invented. But P scales are logarithmic. And a lot of people don't have much practice with logarithms in everyday life, even though you've learned them to some point in your math careers. You're not used to using them, so you forget about what they're all about. So it's good to just use some examples. Let me just tell you, though, that there are different logarithms. They have different bases. I said the base 10 log. I could have written a lowercase, a super subscript 10 there, but it's usually implied when you write out log. Anyway, the base 10 log of some number, whatever that number is, the base 10 log is the number, is the exponent that you have to raise 10 to in order to equal that number. Okay? For instance, if I say, what is the base 10 log of 1,000? What is that number? Yes, it's 3, because you have to raise 10, the base, to the third power in order to equal that number, 1,000. 10 to the third equals 1,000. What about 100? If the log of 100 is 2. And 10? 1. What about the log of 1? 0, because 1 equals 10 raised to the 0 power. Any non-zero number raised to the zero power equals 1, right? But notice that we went down from 1,000 to 100, which is only 1/10 of 1,000, to 10, which is only 1/10 of 10, 1/10 of 100, to 1, which is only 1/10 of 10, right? We made steps of an order of magnitude each. Each step is 10 times bigger than the one below it, right? But the log went down just in integers, right? From 4 to 3, from 3 to 2 to 1 in that case. What about 1/10, which would be 1/10 of 1, right? You go down another 1/10 step. Right. 1/10 can be expressed as 10 to the negative 1, right? And when you express it that way, it's easy to see what the log is. The log of 10 to the negative 1 is simply negative 1. Because to get that number, you have to raise 10 to the negative 1 to equal it. Okay. Well, what about this number? You can forget about the 1 times, because that doesn't change the value. Just 10 to the negative 7th. What is the log of that? Is it what? Well, just this number by itself, 10 to the negative 7th, what is its log? No. The log is what you have to raise 10 to in order to equal that number. What do you have to raise 10 to equal 10 to the negative 7th? Negative 7. That's the log. Just like 10 to the negative 1 has a log of negative 1, right? Okay, that's the log. But the pH is the negative log of it. So the negative log of 10 to the negative 7th is the negative of negative 7, which is positive. That's why we define P scales as negative logs, so we can turn these pain-in-the-ass numbers into just a positive version of the exponent and work with those instead. Does that all make sense? Okay. Now, that's what you measure in pure water. And that is why 7 is the center of the pH scale, not because we just chose 7. It's the actual measurement for water, which it's based on. Okay? And that's pure water. In that case, when you have a pure water solution and there's 10 to the negative 7th molar hydrogen ions, which is what the pH of a 7 indicates by this definition, then you also have that same concentration of hydroxide ions, because you can't make one without the other if all you have is pure water. Okay? Is that a question?
So what you're saying is that you guys don't like the negative 7, so you do...
Well, we're just lazy.
Yeah, so you don't want the smaller ones, so you just want to keep it.
Yeah, if we know that all of our numbers are going to be of this form, they're all small, they're all going to have negative exponents, then we just define this to make it easier to work with the numbers, to transform those into positive integers or positive numbers. They don't have to be integers.
So it's never going to go negative?
It can, actually. And that's a good point. There's also, you might have all learned that it goes from 0 to 14. Those aren't absolute limits. You could go below 0 or above 14. Just most things are in that range. But it's centered on 7 based on pure water. Now, an acid, you can define acid three major ways, but the way I'm going to define it for this course is that an acid is a substance that contains hydrogen, but when you put it into water, it dissociates, it ionizes. And so it loses not the entire hydrogen, but the proton, just like water does in autoionization. It splits into two things, hydrogen ions and whatever else is in that acid. So when it's in water, you no longer have the acid. You no longer have that whole compound. Instead, you have hydrogen ions that you've added plus these other ions that you've added. Well, the hydrogen ions that you've added are in addition to the hydrogen atoms that you already have because of the autoionization of water. So acids put into water increase the hydrogen ion concentration of the solution. Did you follow that? Let's say you put an acid into water and it increases the overall hydrogen ion concentration tenfold. So instead of 10 to the negative 7th molar, you would have, what is 10 times bigger than 10 to the negative 7th? What is it? No. 10 to the negative 6th molar is 10 times bigger, right? 10 to the negative 7th is 0.000001. 10 times bigger is 0.000001. This is 10 to the negative 7th. This is 10 to the negative 6th, right? Well, what is the log of 10 to the negative 6th? Negative 6th. The negative log of that, therefore the pH, is 6. This is why the lower the number gets, the more acidic it is. Because you have a smaller negative exponent, that makes the value bigger, right? That's why. But importantly, this is not a linear scale, like a meter stick. A linear scale is one in which every step is the same size as every other step. This is a logarithmic scale, so every step is 10 times bigger than the one below it, or 10 times smaller than the one above it. They're all different sizes, even though they're drawn the same, like a linear scale. So that means to go from pH 7 to pH 6, that's 10 times more acidic, 10 times the concentration of hydrogen ions. To go from 6 to 5, that's another 10 times. But 7 to 5 is 100 times, right? 100 times more acidic. Two orders of magnitude. 7 to 4, three orders of magnitude, 1,000 times more acidic, and so on. Now, the reason this is important, well, first let's actually go to 10 and look at the pH scale again with some familiar items listed along the scale to show you whether they're acidic or basic. I didn't actually mention basic. But if you have a smaller hydrogen ion concentration compared to water, that would make it even more negative, right? A negative 8, negative 9th, and so on. Therefore, the pH will be greater than 7 if you have even smaller concentration of hydrogen ions. Well, we call these solutions basic or alkaline. Those are interchangeable words. So any given solution is either neutral, like water is, at 7, or basic, pH numerically greater than 7, or acidic, numerically less than 7. Okay? And you can see, for instance, gastric juice in your stomach is really acidic, a pH of 2. This makes it the most inhospitable place in your body for things to live, which is why the millions of bacteria that we put into our mouth each day, whether it's by eating or just by living, breathing, we continuously are swallowing those, putting them into the garbage disposal of our body. Most species of bacteria can't tolerate that pH, so it kills most species. It's a perfect place to put them, ones that could harm us. Okay, but the reason that pH is such a big deal in overall biology is illustrated in slide 11. pH is a variable. There's all kinds of variables that are part of overall homeostasis. Organisms try to keep variables from varying too much, right? Homeostasis is all about keeping the values of variables within tolerable limits. And temperature and pH are two big important variables, because even a small change in either one of them, temperature or pH, can change the shapes of proteins. And I've already talked a little bit already about how important proteins are to cells, right? They do all the important jobs in biology, proteins of some sort. We've talked about them giving you directly your traits. That's because they do all the important jobs. Well, whatever the specific function of a protein is, it has that specific function because it has a specific shape. And if that shape changes, it loses its function, which will kill the organism. And that's why we can't tolerate very drastic changes in either temperature or pH. Here you have what hopefully is obviously an unhealthy forest. It's unhealthy because of acid rain. Acid rain is, or acid precipitation, it could be snow, whatever. But it's exactly what the name says it is. Instead of it being water, it's a solution, it's an acidic solution because of various pollutants that get put into the air, sulfur-containing compounds, for instance, combine with the water and turn into sulfuric acid. So the raindrops are actually acidic, messes with the organisms that live there. And these trees are examples of producers. Ecologically speaking, there are two kinds of organisms in the world, producers and consumers. Producers are the organisms that are able to make their own food. And they're the only reasons that consumers can exist, because they feed us too. Consumers cannot make their own food. They absolutely have to have producers in order to exist, which is why it's a big deal when you start seeing die-off of producers, because we consumers will be next. That is that chapter.